technology can be used in really any way with any student. Mm. And I've always found it as a way to kind of level the playing field for my special education students, whether they were special needs or came from a non-English speaking home or whatever the situation was.
You're listening to EdTech Heroes, a podcast that looks at how teachers in today's classrooms can use technology to improve student learning. In each episode, a hero in the world of education will share their story and discuss how innovation can influence the minds of the next generation. Let's jump in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to EdTech Heroes. I am your host, Neff, and today's guest is Renee Dawson. Renee is an EdTech specialist that manages the Verizon Innovative Learning Initiative at Long Middle School and has been in the education field for 16 years. Formerly a special education teacher, she taught in elementary, middle, and high school settings and also worked with students in hospital and home environments. She has also worked extensively with students with a variety of disabilities and assistive technology needs. Renee, welcome to EdTech Heroes.
Hi, happy to be here, Neff.
Awesome. And we were just talking off camera a little bit, and this is Renee's first podcast. How are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm a little nervous, but pretty good.
I feel good about it, too. I feel like there are going to be a flood of comments and some really jazz listeners to learn about all of the information that you have accumulated over the past 16 years.
Gosh, it's been that long. It's like just yesterday I graduated.
It was a few yesterdays ago, but you're right. It wasn't too long ago. So I kind of want to start because I know this is not your first foray in talking to the Screencastify crew. You've met my partner in crime, Olivia, who ran the Screencastify Coaches Academy and has now been on the podcast twice as part of just talking about innovation and things of that nature. So I'm kind of curious, tell me a little bit about what going through the Coaches Academy was like. What were some of your takeaways?
The Coaches Academy was a lot of fun. Not only did we learn the fundamentals of coaching, Olivia did some great videos for us to watch and had some great articles for us to read, but we also got to reflect on what we were learning and share our thoughts using the Screencastify tools, which was really neat. But I have to say the best part was the opportunity we had to network with other EdTech geniuses from around the world. I think she said we had like 24 countries represented or something. It was insane.
Wow.
There are people from all over the world. One of them took the initiative to put us all in like a Twitter group. So we're still in that group and we still can connect and do connect on the regular.
That's awesome. We actually just had Eric Kurtz on the podcast. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but one of his takeaways was for educators to do just that, to create opportunities to be able to network, whether it's in things like the Screencastify Coaches Academy, or if it's on Twitter or a Google Educator group or any of those things. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, since you got so much out of that networking opportunity. How can teachers find their tribe and really learn from each other?
Right. Networking is huge in education. And I don't think I realized how big of a space Twitter was for it until I got into the EdTech game this year. I thought Twitter was kind of like old news. We had moved on to something different. But no, Twitter is where it's at for EdTech education. I get so many great ideas from other EdTech educators or different ambassadors to different groups of software. And there's always something on Twitter to share, to follow, to try out yourself, to shed light on, to say, oh, I do it like this, so maybe you should try it this way. Or you're having trouble with this, try this extension or this app. So it's definitely like a big PLN that's just like worldwide. And anywhere you look, you could find somebody who's an expert in what you're trying to figure out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love Twitter. And I feel like I had the same experience. I'm like, are the kids even on Twitter these days? And maybe they're not, but I'll tell you who is on Twitter, some amazing educators. And there are so many tidbits there. And it's really cool to have just like a few characters in terms of like just pushing you in the right direction and understanding new tools and pedagogical approaches. Like, Twitter is awesome. I'm with you there. So really cool that you were able to find your tribe there.
Actually, I have to like give credit to my school district superintendent, Dr. Lisa Herring, and my boss, Dr. Natasha Rachel, because it's part of our job to tweet. They want us to show what we're doing, what our boots on the ground experiences in classrooms are like. They retweet us, they celebrate what we're doing. We highlight our learners and all the amazing things going on in Atlanta Public Schools through Twitter. And it's a great way for everybody to see the amazing things we're doing and for the leaders to share out what their teachers are doing in the schools.
That is dope that you guys are doing. I want to come and be able to tweet as part of my job and show the amazing things that are happening in Atlanta. Super cool.
Definitely. There's some pretty amazing stuff.
So I know I have taken a little bit of a look at your Twitter feed, and I know one of the things that you talk about is editing and how that has the power to really improve video. So for you, it's like recording is one half of what's going on. And then after you record, you really have to edit in order for that video to be maximally effective. So can you tell me a little bit about some of your favorite ways to improve videos after a teacher has recorded them?
Definitely. I would say don't be afraid to just record and then go back and edit all of the weird things out. All the umps, the sniffles, the opening and closing of doors, anything like that. You can edit those out. And Screencastify is one of my favorite editing tools because it is so easy to click into the video and edit and cut and trim exactly where you need to be. I'm a big fan of the zoom button because I feel like you could never see the details on the screen when you're recording. So I like the zoom button to zoom into different features. But my favorite hack, this is like a total secret, so I'm letting the world like know my secret. If you use the text box, but just put a border around it and no text inside, it creates like a highlighting box. So you can highlight different things. And I kind of discovered that during Coaches Academy, and I use that probably more than anything else. I just use the neon green to highlight, like click here, and I just put the little box there to click right there, and it's a ton of time, and it gets my teachers and whoever's watching my video to focus right on that spot.
I love that tip. I'm going to confess, Renee, I did know that you could do that, but I do know that there are a lot of people who probably have their minds blown right now. And what I really love about that is that, one, it's a really simple thing to do, but it also provides so much value. I think a lot of times we think about trying to make video a little bit more analogous to what we're doing in the classroom. And in the classroom, you get to do all these cool things, even if we're just talking about a whiteboard. You underline something, or you circle it, or you draw arrows. And all of these things are making it more clear to your audience what is most important. And to be able to impart that into video is so cool. I'm curious, what impact does doing things like that have on engagement for the viewers who are actually watching those videos?
Okay, so here's what I always say. Practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. So a special education teacher, if I'm giving an assignment for my students to practice, I don't want to risk the chance that they might do it wrong 10 or 20 times. And then we have to reteach it. So video is crucial to me as a special education teacher, as a way for kids to quickly review. Or like, I know Olivia loves QR codes. I'm a big QR code fan too. Just having a QR code on a worksheet to be able to scan and get that video to pop up with the strategy or with the way to solve the math problem, then they can do it correctly. So they're practicing for something that could be perfection one day. And they're making the correct formula permanent, not doing it incorrectly over and over again. So that's one of the most important things for me with video, is making sure that my viewers understand how to do things, go slowly, and can have the opportunity to pause and rewind if they need to.
Yeah, I really like that saying of practice makes permanent. I have not thought about it that way, but it's true, right? Like if you practice the wrong way to shoot a basketball 100 times, it becomes harder to be able to actually shoot it the right way. And I think if I'm understanding what you're saying, Renee, our job as educators is to be able to reduce that ambiguity when learners are going back to understand something, right? So we want to make sure that they have a video right in front of them so that they get the correct way. And as they practice, what they're making permanent is the right strategy.
Correct. Especially with the way that some concepts are taught these days. Like I know I always hear from parents, we didn't do math this way when I was in school. And we didn't. So it's definitely a different method and different formula or strategy. And then coming from the schools that I've worked in that were mostly low income and ESOL families, a lot of the parents either weren't home at night to help or didn't have the background knowledge to help, or maybe didn't even have the language knowledge to help. So I wanted to make sure my kids felt successful and could be successful however they needed to do their homework. And if that means that they just take a little piece of me home in video, then that's fine with me.
Yeah, for sure. That makes so much sense, right? And we want to think about how we are able to create equitable opportunities. And if we have this kid who is excited about doing their homework because they have all the appropriate tools versus a student who is really, really dreading it, that creates such a different learning experience. And it's cool that the act of creating just a couple minute video might be the difference between joyful learning and dreadful learning.
For both the student and the parent, I would have parents say, I understand how to do this now. We can watch the video with my students. So, okay, great. Now you both know. And then you have, by the end of the year, you have this huge treasure trove of videos that you can easily put onto an end of the year review sheet for those dreaded statewide assessments. So you have all the video ready to go just to put on there so the kids can review the concepts they learned in August. Mm-hmm. And they're ready to go. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's all on your Screencastify library, organized neatly, hopefully, by title, not like mine. But you have all the ready to go for your students. You can edit if needed. You can redo them. Mm-hmm. But you're pretty much ready to go for the whole year.
You know what else I love about that concept? And I like that you talked about this end of the year portfolio, is that by the end of the year, and really at every point in the year, our learners are going to be on different paths to mastery, right? So if we think about 10 different concepts that we might want students to be able to master, it could be that Jimmy knows concept number one incredibly well, but Johnny is not so hot on concept number one, but really needs concept number two. One of the cool things about video, and especially when we hodgepodge them all together, is it kind of creates this choose your own adventure experience for lots of students, right? They can say at the end of the year, the video that I really need to watch from my teacher is this one. And it's okay if students are watching 30 different videos at the same time, right?
Right, definitely. I use that a lot in my learning playlist method. So I create like a playlist of different videos that are in a digital format for them to be able to click on and access. And they can choose what they need. They can choose a way to show me what they've learned. There's all sorts of different choices. It's kind of like a choice board whittled down into like one or two choices per section. And the playlist is a great way to structure your review for tests or to teach new content. And we actually, at my school, we have a model personalized learning classroom for the district. And we run learning playlists in this eighth grade science classroom. And the kids have taken 100% ownership of their learning. We had kids that figured out that with the videos, they could rewatch the pieces they need to rewatch before answering questions or do like interactive questions in the videos. I was showing the teachers how to find ready-made content that they could just find on different ed tech tools and put right into their playlist. And we saw students go from failing grades to B's and C's, and it was incredible. Wow. They really, really took responsibility and stepped up to the plate, and you know, they're better students for it now. And they're prepared for the future, because in real life, most bosses don't stand over your shoulder and tell you what to do every second of the day. You have to have some kind of like self-regulation. So if you're giving a child a playlist and saying you have until the end of the week to get through with this, and they take that ownership, that's preparing them for real life.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, that's our job as educators. It makes me happy. My first group of students that I taught back in middle school, they are about to graduate college now, and I am still in touch with some of them. And when you get to hear about these really real world things that they are doing, it's so worth it. And when you know that you have done just a little bit to be able to contribute to that, I'm not going to take a lot of credit. I'm going to take like a morsel of credit for where they're at right now. But when we do things like that, like allow them to have some agency over their own learning and understand how to regulate their time and start to think metacognitively, that's when we really pat ourselves on the back as educators, because we're doing something substantial.
Definitely.
So I want to talk a little bit about your time working with special education students. I think a lot of times we hear from educators, especially when we talk about instructional technology, that there is no nexus between providing the accommodations for special education students and infusing technology in the classroom. I don't think that's right. And I don't think you think that's right. So I am curious how you have been able to use technology with that population of students and have positive results.
Well, technology can be used in really any way with any student. Mm-hmm. And I've always found it as a way to kind of level the playing field for my special education students, to give them that leg up that, you know, we all see those, the equity posters with the boxes, to give that kid the right size box that they need to see over the fence, if you want to look at it that way. And that's always been what technology has been for my students, whether they were special needs or came from a non-English speaking home or whatever the situation was. I have to say that the first way I ever used video, and I used Screencastify for it, was at the beginning of the pandemic. And my students needed questions and answers read aloud on a test. And I didn't know how to do it virtually, because they were taking the test on their own. Then I realized, okay, so I've used Screencastify to record other stuff. What if I put the test on my screen and recorded myself reading it, and then they could follow along? So I started doing that with everything I needed read to my students, making Screencastify videos of it, posting it in Google Classroom. And then I was meeting their IEP accommodations. I was meeting their needs, and they were able to listen to the test and take the test along with me as I read it to them. And it was a huge success. So this was easy for reviewing concepts. I could make a video giving detailed directions for a project. Like, here's your template in the slide deck, and this is what you do on each slide. Because what good are written directions if our reading level is really low? You probably need verbal directions at that point. And then just anything that I was going to read out loud to them, I would record on Screencastify and put it in Google Classroom.
That is so cool. And when I was in the classroom, I had tons of students who had an accommodation that required read aloud assessments. And at the time, this was, I don't know, about 6-7 years ago. I didn't know about Screencastify. It was a young nef at that time, right? And it was so much trouble to be able to do that, because you want to do it effectively, right? Like, this student might need to hear number 10 read aloud over and over, and that's okay. I want to give them the opportunity to hear it as many times as they need. But then you've got other students who also need other things. And even if we talk about just an in-person classroom, I think lots of teachers can think about how hard it is to be able to meet that specific accommodation. But technology allows us to do that. And what's cool is it allows us to do it in ways that actually might be better than if we did it in person, right? Like, you talked a little bit before about this really simple idea of students being able to pause and rewind, and they can control the volume and they can control the speed. And it kind of puts them in the driver's seat of actually being able to internalize this information.
It does. And it makes them even with everybody else, because nobody knows what they're doing with their headphones on. Nobody knows that the student over in the front is watching the same segment 5 times to be able to get the answer. Nobody knows that the person in the back needs the volume up all the way because they have a little bit of hearing loss. So they don't have to expose their weaknesses or their vulnerabilities to the whole class to get what they need. And then even to take it a step further, if you put the test questions in Screencastify's interactive questions, you get immediate data feedback on your students. So that's like even a better win-win for using Screencastify to read tests aloud.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I hadn't thought about that in terms of this maybe social pressure that kids might experience and being able to dull that or perhaps completely eliminate that. Yeah, that's cool, because you can think about so many different ways in which that might inhibit learning, of just trying to make sure that you're with the in crowd as a student.
Yeah, I mean, how many times in conversation have you said, okay, hold on, say that again, and then just gone, oh, okay, great, because you're afraid to ask them to repeat a third time? So it's the same way with students. I know I do it all the time. I just, I'll go off into space But it's the same way with our students. A lot of the social anxieties that we have, our kids have tenfold.
Exactly. Yeah. I am guilty of that all the time. Or if somebody straight up asks you if you know about something and you feel like it's supposed to be like common knowledge, you're like, yeah, of course I know what you're talking about. You have no idea what they're saying, but you're going to agree 9 times out of 10. Exactly. You're like, oh, okay, now I'm caught up. And go like to like the Cliff Notes or something to try to have an intelligent conversation about whatever the heck they're talking about. Yes, I have been there one too many times. All right. Well, I want to transition a little bit to talk about summer because this is early June, and that's certainly something that is on everybody's mind. And I hear through the grapevine that you just appeared on a live session with Screencastify to talk about summer. And some of our listeners might not have had a chance to take a listen to that webinar. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the conclusions from that space? What should we be doing to prepare or during the summer?
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, I want you to rid your vocabulary of the phrase summer slide. Just get rid of it. Just forget you've heard it. Replace it with summer bridge. Because we want to bridge any gaps over to the next grade and get prepared for the next grade. Instead of thinking it as they're going to lose something that they had, let's look at it as what can they gain by moving up this bridge to the next grade level. And that can include extension activities, review activities, or even just grade level activities. It can include all three of those. And so you want to look for activities or create activities that really bridge their learning between the two grades. You know, there's always standards that kind of spiral to the next grade. So look at those standards and see how you can review it and then extend it to what they're going to need to learn in the next year. So I always work with students on summer bridge skills, or when I do packets, I always try to make it a bridge packet. So it's more interesting than, but we did this all year. Like, why am I doing this again? I recently read an article that said like 70% of what we teach students is something they already know. So we clearly don't need to be wasting our time on what they already know. Just review it quickly and move on to something that they don't know.
Sure. And how do you prepare for that? Because I know a little bit earlier in the podcast, you had a really salient point that students have different home experiences, right? Like one student might be doing that packet at a very well-resourced summer camp and have access to real teachers who are there to help them through. Another student might be doing that with a parent who maybe is a teacher and is walking them through that. And then we might have students who spend most of the summer by themselves as their parents work or whatever the case may be. So how do we create these summer experiences that are stretches for our students while also making sure that it's not so much of a stretch that perhaps it becomes something that is defeating for kids?
Definitely. And, you know, video is my favorite answer to that. Because you can provide everything you need with a 2 to 3 minute video for the student. And then you can have it, if the summer packet is virtual, then it could be linked in virtually. If it's a paper packet, you could use a QR code because most of our students, somebody in their family has a smartphone that they can scan a QR code with. My students definitely left my classroom knowing what a QR code was, how to make one and how to scan it. So we at least had that skill. So they can look at their packet and either review what they need, get extended learning through it, or review. So you can mix up the videos with a bunch of different things. I'm like super cheesy with my students, and that's just one of the things they learn to love. So I'd always like put little jokes in just randomly. Just really cheesy like dad jokes and just put those in randomly. So just to give them something to laugh about over the summer and just be like, oh, I'm going to miss her. So definitely using video to bridge that gap. And then also like you connect things directly into your Screencastify video. So you can put like a QR code that would link to a multiplication fact practice site or link to another technology that they can go to at the end of the video to practice even further. So if it's a concept you've taught and you want them to practice that a little more, you can add a QR code easily at the end of Screencastify or a link and they can go straight there.
I like that for two reasons. One, it gets them the extra information that they need. But the other thing is this relationship, right? Like A packet on its own might feel a little bit dull to kids, but being able to say I am engaging in this bridge activity, which is not just review, but is actually getting me ready for the next grade so that I feel prepared. And I also have this guide that is walking me through it, who is this teacher who I have a relationship with. That is so, so cool. So I like that video is not just a video, right? Like it is like a virtue signal to that kid in that moment of like, hey, I'm right here with you. Even though it's July, you're sitting at home, we're still together, we're in it together.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of gamified learning. So the last one I did before I left the classroom was like, it was Jumanji themed. And I was like the NPC that kind of led them through the jungle. So like they had like little instructions and like videos of me talking, leading them to the next level. And they would get different badges when they finished each level to make it even more like fun for them and more similar to what they enjoy doing in their spare time anyway. So if you give them something that's on a game board or with a badge, they're into it.
I love that. Of you being the NPC. I would have been so over the moon for that. I was already the nerdy kid that loved summer packets, but if it was on a Jumanji board, I would have been over the moon.
Yeah, there's a website called Flippity that you can actually enter it all into a Google Sheet and it makes the game board for you.
What?
It's pretty magical. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. So we're going to have to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. Flippity.net. Check it out. I do that. Even my teachers, I have a leaderboard for my teachers for professional learning and that gets cutthroat at the end of the year. And it's just for stickers. These adults will fight to the death for a sticker.
It is going down in Atlanta. You guys clearly are pretty competitive.
You're serious here.
All right. So we got some good tips for the summer. And I love this idea of both gamification and also infusing ourselves in the summer activities that we send over, not to fight summer slide, I like that, but to provide a bridge to the next grade. Before we wrap up our discussion, we have a segment here where we ask every single one of our heroes to share some tips or advice for teachers. We talked about video editing earlier, so what are some of your favorite quick tips for teachers to use during the recording process? So some cool things that they can do during editing, but what would you recommend while they're recording?
Try to make it like you're teaching. Try to act like you're teaching a class. That's how I always find it easiest, is if I just kind of imagine like I'm teaching. But I've been doing that since I was a little girl. Like I used to come home from school and line all my stuffed animals up and teach them my homework. So that's just natural to me. I've always wanted to be a teacher. So I guess it's a good thing that I am. But just pretend like you're teaching. You know, if you need to like have a backdrop of students on your desktop to like pretend that you can see them, that works too. I also would say if you're not comfortable using the webcam, don't use it. Some days I look a hot mess and I don't want to be on the webcam. So I don't use it. You don't have to be on the webcam. And then I would say like one of the things I like the most after I record is I like to add like an intro screen with like my Bitmoji dancing Snapchat and like a little bit of music just to kind of get it warmed up for my video.
I like all of those tips.
It's super easy to add that in Screencastify. Just add the media at the end.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. I love the idea of thinking about it as teaching a class, right? Because I think when we all walk up to the room, we kind of have this teacher persona. I know for me, it's like I could be having like a really bad day and you're like, okay, let me put on my teacher voice. Let me make sure that I am trying to be as dynamic as I can, trying to be as engaging as I can. And sometimes it's really easy to think, okay, but I'm just sitting in front of my laptop, so I don't need to do all of those tricks that I usually use to make sure that I am taking breaks for comprehension. And I am engaging and I'm repeating and I'm doing all of those things that we know are important. But we got to remember, even if we're just talking to the computer right now, kids are going to watch that later on. So being able to adopt that same persona is such amazing advice.
Yeah. If you have never seen or gone on the YouTube channel Math by Fives for Mr. Ives, he is where I get like my video mojo from. He's like my... I look up to him. His videos are so engaging and I actually got by one of my homebound students through calculus on his videos. Like that, the only reason she passed was because his videos were so great. So definitely check out Math by Fives on YouTube. He's amazing. And then look at the silly things he does. Like he has just silly things he says every video that just would get the kids to either roll their eyes or laugh. He draws like a flower at the end of every answer, which is kind of silly, but it's just his thing. And he has these little trademark sayings and moves that just make it his video and make you want to watch another one. So having those little things, like if you say something silly in class all the time, like I used to say, hey, party people, or hey, all you cool cats and kittens, like after Tiger King was popular, then say that at the beginning of the video. Don't hide the silly things you do in your classroom just because you're making a video. Let it be as you are in front of the kids.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I like it. I am a dad joke person. So that was something once I started to use video, it's like, all right, let's throw some jokes in. Like kids know I am crazy corny. So I'm going to be just as corny as I am normally. So I love it. And I got one final question for you. And I think you're going to have a lot of answers because you've already started to give us some dope resources. What are a few more of your favorite resources that you like to share with teachers?
Well, I told you about Flippity already. Flippity, and it's free, so that's even cooler. So definitely check out flippity.net. I also am a big fan of the Wakelet Wave. I've read the Wakelet Wave. I'm a Wakelet ambassador, new ambassador. So I always love Wakelet because Wakelet is like Pinterest on steroids. If you can think about it, you can put it on a Wakelet. I use Wakelet for everything from resources for professional learning sessions to recipes for home. My boyfriend uses it for personal training clients to put stretches and videos and food lists on there for them. So Wakelet can be really used for anything in your personal or professional life. And then I'm also a big fan of if you can't beat them at something, join them. So I am a Minecraft global mentor because we had a major Minecraft problem at my middle school. And I figured out that if I taught the teachers how to use Minecraft for Education and where to get the lesson plans, because they have hundreds of lessons on every subject, they just download the world, get the kids in the Minecraft world, and then they're actually playing Minecraft and learning at the same time. Whoa, right? So the kids started playing Minecraft in class to learn through the education edition. And then they weren't playing Minecraft when they weren't supposed to be playing Minecraft because they were like Minecrafted out. So we kind of figured, you know, we can't take it off the computers because we're a Minecraft district. So let's play Minecraft and make it educational. And that's changed the way the teachers teach, the way they plan. It's changed the whole culture of the building. We now have a student ambassador group for Minecraft that are older students in the school, help teachers and students learn the ins and outs of Minecraft. And they go to conferences and do tournaments and stuff as well. So it's been pretty impactful in my building.
That's so cool, especially turning something that used to be a problem and teachers felt like was taking away from instruction to something that is actually adding to it. I love it. And I'm also going to point out that you have done a lot of professional learning. I know you've done the Screencastify Coaches Academy, which is free. You did the ambassadorship for Wakelet. You've learned a lot about Minecraft. So I'm going to shout you out, Renee, and then also just mention to folks that if you really love a tool, chances are they probably have some free education or some free groups or PLNs that you might be able to join. Has that been true in your experience?
Definitely. I'm going to like sound like such a nerd like that has no life, but I really don't have a life. I'm still trying to get post-pandemic like back into the real world. But I started this year with like 5 badges from different ed tech tools. And now I have 56.
Jeez.
So I got 50 badges this year. Because when I want to know more about a tool, I just go and do their certification program and get a badge in it. Because that's how you're going to use it. And I might as well get something cool to put on my email signature. So I have like a whole page of all my badges. And it's been pretty neat. So
I like it.
I'm the quintessential self-learner. So I'm always like going for the next like learning opportunity. I love to just sit at home on the weekends and watch true crime documentaries and like geek out on my MacBook. Anything that I can do while I listen to true crime in the background is cool with me. My boyfriend plays Magic on his phone. So I think that makes him the bigger nerd. That's cool.
It makes you made for each other, which is good.
okay, but we'll see that.
But yeah, that sounds awesome. And just the sheer number that you've been able to accumulate, and there are hundreds and hundreds more, it kind of shows that there is something out there for everybody, regardless of what you teach or what you want to learn more about. You can go out and kind of go through some of these self-paced courses or join some of these communities and really, really be in a good spot. So Renee, I so appreciate you joining EdTech Heroes because you have given us so many tidbits of things to use in our classrooms over the summer or to continue learning about all of the dope things that make up the EdTech community. Listeners, you got to follow Renee on Twitter. Apparently it is where it's at, and there are lots and lots of conversations happening there. If you would like to follow her, she is at APSITS Dawson for more great tips. And we'll also throw her handle down in the show notes. I'm your host, Neff Dukes. I'm also on Twitter, and I'm looking forward to seeing every single one of you next time on the podcast or perhaps on your tweets.
Thank you for listening to this episode of EdTech Heroes, presented by Screencastify. Screencastify is the leading video creation tool for creating more personal learning experiences. If you enjoyed what you learned in this episode, be sure to follow EdTech Heroes wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, or visit screencastify.com to get immediate access to all the latest episodes.